Coming up on episode 306 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Volkswagen Taos, the Jeep Grand Cherokee L, the Nissan Z, the Buick Envista, no more gray Fiats, VW goes autonomous in Austin, the Ford Maverick Hybrid is no longer a bargain, more on the adoption of NACS for EV charging in North America, and goodbye to Peter Horbury. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 306 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abul Samich from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Roberto Baldwin, and I am now the news and features content manager for Hot Cars and Top Speed. I got a job.
And now you just have to keep remembering that title.
I can't remember the title. I can't remember. I know what I do.
At least they cut it down from the original version of it.
It was very long before. There was like operations words in there. There were a lot of words in there, but they've cut it down to just news and features content manager. So if you've been to Hot Cars or Top Speed, so things are going to be changing. I'm going to be making things better. We're going to be making things more like a. My friends work at these places, but I'm really aiming for Motor One and for the Drive. I'm going to take them down. I should call Kyle and tell him I'm going to take them down over at the Drive. We're always going to take each other down, but we're always just like, hey, what are you doing later? I don't know. You want to hang out? Okay.
And Nicole will be joining us in progress. She is on her way home. She was dealing with some stuff, some family stuff this morning. So she will be with us in a few minutes, hopefully. But in the meantime, what have you been driving?
So this past week, I drove the Jeep Grand Cherokee L.
Ooh,
the L stands for long limo.
Longer.
Longer.
Lengthier.
Larger. Lengthier. Anyway, you get the gist. So I drove that. I drove that up to Sierra Meadows up near Oakhurst on the way to Yosemite because a bunch of my bands, well, not a bunch, two of them, had shows at a music festival they had up there. And so I needed a big car. I'm a big boy and I need a big cereal. So the Jeep Cherokee is big.
Yeah, so this was the replacement for the Expedition that got broken last week, right?
Yes. So this was, I was very fortunate. Jake over, he's our page one, local fleet manager. And he is a wonderful person. Him, the whole crew over there, really, page one Bay Area, just outstanding. They're always very helpful. They're always really accommodating because sometimes, you know, we'll set up a whole schedule for what I need to do. You know, here are the cars that are coming. And then like 3 days later, I'll get invited to a bunch of events. So then I have to like email like, hey, I can't eat this car. Can we change this car to this day? Can we, you know, can I pick up this car at the airport and drop this one off at the airport? And they're very accommodating. They're very nice. And the fact that they were able to give me another large vehicle the next day was really helpful. And yeah, it's just enough room. The Jeep, if you're in a band and you're the guitarist and also a DJ, and also you have a giant box with a Daft Punk helmet in it. This is the vehicle to get.
Excellent. So everybody out there who's got a big Daft Punk helmet and some guitars and other gear.
And some amps. My
Grand Cherokee L.
Yeah. Plus all the stuff for you and your wife.
That's what, at least the market of what? The addressable market is like three or four people.
Yeah. There's like three people in the world. So three of us, we're doing great. Jeep has been sort of a premium brand for a long time. You know, we think of the Wrangler, but the reality is, you know, all of those SUVs, all those Grand Cherokees, all those Wagoneers.
And really in the last decade, it's gotten significantly more premium.
Yeah.
You know, since Fiat took over Chrysler, you know, they've really moved the Jeep brand up market.
Which makes sense because it was always sort of affluent. I always remember affluent, like families were the ones who bought the Cherokees, you know, in my small town because it snows and there's dirt and you got to go off-road all the time. You know, they sort of bought those. They didn't buy Broncos. They didn't buy, I guess not really Subarus that much at the time, but you know, they bought the Cherokee. They bought the Wagoneer. They were the fancy family. So it made sense to sort of just move the whole lineup up market, and those people could buy something and also have a really nice interior inside, which it does have. It has a really nice interior inside. It was very comfortable for a very long, about 3.5 hours each way. I will talk about a little bit about the fuel economy. So it's 18
such
city
as it is.
Such as it is. It's 18 city, 25 highway. I was going uphill at a fast pace and 105 degree weather. So we had the air conditioning blasting. And, you know, we had to go all the way up into the mountains. So by the time I got there, I was averaging 17.5 miles per gallon.
That's not bad, actually.
Which isn't bad when you put it in the context. Like if I had just been driving to say Fresno or LA or somewhere where I'm just cruising along a freeway with very little elevation change, I would have gotten a lot better. And also if it wasn't 105 degrees, blasting the air conditioning because I am from the Bay Area and. If it's 60 degrees and overcast most of the time. In fact, that's what it is right now. I look out the window, 60 degrees overcast. It's outstanding. But when you take us out of the Bay Area and we have to use, you know, air conditioning, yeah, we really, really were blasting it on this vehicle. So I'm going to give it it was like the other day when I did the, the e-tron, Q8 drive where, you know, it didn't quite hit its EPA target. Is about 12 miles or so underneath the EPA target, but it gets crazy windy here, like there's windmills and stuff. So it just sort of destroyed. You know, I was just driving. I was on the freeway just driving again into a headwind like the entire time. And so you know you're like, okay, well this is why it didn't hit its EPA target. It's the same thing with this. I mean, this is why this vehicle didn't hit its EPA target because we were, you know, it was loaded full of gear, air conditioning was blasting, and we're going uphill. Into the mountains. So
how did it do coming downhill? Because presumably you went downhill on the way back.
Yes, but what happened was because while we were there, I just decimated that. I made it worse. It got down to like 15, like average, because we were just kind of driving around and looking around because it was so hot during the day. And you know, you do a show at night, and so we could either A, stay in the cabin, or B, just kind of go driving around and looking around. So we opted to sort of drive around and look around a lot of times. Because it would be so hot outside. You'd be outside for like 10 minutes. I'm like, I can't deal with this. Like, I'll get a heat rash. Like, I'm just like, no. So by the time we got back, I think I got it back up to like 17 after like destroying it, driving, you know, very short distances with the air conditioning on, with the car just sitting with the air. Like we would do that thing where you start it and it starts, you know, turns the air conditioning, just like destroying the environment for our own comfort is basically what we were doing the entire time we had this Jeep. And every time I do it, I'm like, oh, I kind of feel a little, I don't feel that bad when I do it with the Kona. You're like, oh, just turn it on, turn the air conditioning on. Cause it's electricity. It's cheaper. We get it at night. It's like, oh, but this is like, you know, we're just destroying like dead dinosaurs and plants from like the prehistoric age in order to be a little comfortable and just filling the air with.
You are the cause of climate change, then.
Yeah. That's what I felt like. I felt like that. This the 4th of July weekend, America. I was full on American. I was just destroying the environment in a vehicle that most of the time I probably wouldn't drive. But you know, we did load it. It wasn't like I was like the time I had the Lincoln, Navigator, and it was just me and my wife driving all the way to San Diego. And Lincoln's like, we can give it to you this week. I'm like, I'm driving to San Diego this week. I'm like, do you care? They're like, no, it's fine. At one point, my wife just sat in the third row. So the Grand Cherokee, it's nice. It's comfortable. It has that little funny family thing where you can see your family.
Like, oh, the camera.
The family lets camera.
You see the second and third row seats.
Yeah, but you only see like the back of their heads. It's really weird. It's not like the camera is like right behind the first row where it's looking backwards.
Right, it's
like,
kind of in the middle or above the second row, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like above the second row. So you look down. So I guess you can look down and see what your kids are doing. You can make sure they're not like, you know, I guess on their tablets.
If you have an infant in one of those rear facing child seats.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense for that. It makes less sense for you know, people who don't have children, I guess. I'm just like, what are my friends doing? I'm like, what are you looking at? Why are you reading that site? I wrote that article. You should be reading it on another site. One of the issues I had is the way the infotainment screen is displayed. It's not like at a right angle. It's kind of angled down towards the windshield. So it ends up getting more glare than most other vehicles that I've driven. because it's not at a 90 degree. It's, you know,
right. They don't have the, where the screen is like tablet style perched up on top of the dash. It's integrated.
It's kind of integrated in the dash. And so because it's pointed, I was getting a lot of sun coming in through the windshield that was like hitting it. And, you know, I didn't have the top open at all because it was, again, 105 degrees. And I wanted as little sun in the vehicle as possible. And also those buttons along the top above that, unless you're tall, you can't really see what's going on. You don't know what those buttons are. They're like, they're sort of like on top and they're, you know, the names are pointed up and it's just, it's a very weird, it was a weird design decision when it came to the placement of the infotainment screen and the buttons above it. So that, those are my sort of big, like, ooh, come on, decisions that, that Jeep made while they're making this vehicle. Other than that, you know, it, you know, plenty of power. If you're, you need to pass people who drive
the V6 or the V8.
I had the V6, 3.6 liter V6, with 8-speed automatic transmission. Yeah, most of the time I had it in just regular mode, but it doesn't have like an eco mode. You can't, but it does, it lowers and raises itself like there's no tomorrow. Like that's a, half its job is lowering and raising itself. And so while you're driving, it'll be, oh, I've lowered myself to aerodynamic, you know, optimization. So I guess that's its eco mode.
Yeah.
And, you know, when your parking raises itself or you put it in off-road. I mean, I didn't go off-roading in this at all. I drove on a dirt
road. Did you try the third row?
No, I don't bother with third rows anymore, really, to be honest, because I don't know. I mean, I guess I could have fit back there if I really wanted to. The second row was fine as long as the person in front of you didn't put their seat back too far. Even when I pushed the seat back, it still could be a little bit cramped in there. You know, third rows are fine, whatever. If you need a third row, it's there. I mean, I'd rather have the second row that actually moves back further than the third row. Just take the cargo space and forget the, I don't know, those extra two children you have. You shouldn't have had so many children. That's your problem.
it sounds like the Grand Cherokee L is kind of the perfect vehicle for those with a Daft Punk cover band.
But yeah.
If you really need to use the third row, you might be better off stepping up to the Wagoneer.
Yeah. Or just a van.
Yeah.
And get better gas mileage because, you know, it's the Summit 4x4. I didn't do any 4x4ing. I don't know anyone. People.
Most Jeep owners don't.
Yeah, that's the thing, is most Jeep owners aren't taking these things off-road. If you are, then good for you. You know, it's like most people who have trucks. Most, you know, I have a big truck. What do you do with it? I put some stuff on it, so it looks angry. I'm like, okay, well, what do you have a business? Or what are you doing with this truck? And you're like, I just got a truck. I love trucks. I'm like, okay, fine. Meanwhile, this weekend I saw my uncle who has a big ranch and all this stuff, and he had a big, you know, I think he had a Duramax, like, you know, extra cab. And I'm like, all right. And he had a giant, like, tow thing on the back. And I'm like, all right, I know I've had to go up and help him, like, wrangle cattle before. So that's a fun insight into me and my family. So the Jeep Cherokee, no, it's, you know, you're looking for an upscale vehicle. You don't want a Land Rover. Really, that's sort of its, you know, its big who you're fighting with. I know that Mercedes has really been pushing its SUV's ability to go off-road. We took the GLS off-road in Colorado, and it did really well. And surprisingly well for, you know, and we did way more off-roading than I would say 99.9% of most people who buy one of these SUVs will ever do. But Jeep, you know, Jeep has that lineage. You know, it has the word Jeep in it. So you're going to buy it, and you're going to live in Vermont, or you're going to live in Colorado, or this is going to be your car, you know, you're driving around town car in Montana. Cause you're not, you know, your regular big truck is being used to haul cattle.
Well, I think, you know, one of the real competitors to this particular vehicle, to the Grand Cherokee L, I think, is the Rivian R1S. You know, they're almost the same size, you know, very, very similar in size, you know, three row SUV, you know, with the third row's there, but, you know, it's not really, you know, meant for a lot of use, I think.
Yeah. It's just sort of, hey, but,
you know, it's electric instead of gas powered. And I think it's going to be interesting, you know, next year when the Wagoneer S or whatever they end up calling it, because that vehicle is very similar in size as well, arrives, you know, and goes up directly against the R1S to see how they compare.
Well, you can, I mean, one of the things is you can actually get the Jeep.
Yeah.
getting a Rivian's like, that's a good point. I like the Rivian. I like the R1S. I like the R1T. They're both great trucks, great SUVs. But also, I mean, good luck.
Yeah. Well, they did release their second quarter production numbers, and their production volumes increased quite a bit. I think they built, about 12,500 in the second quarter.
Oh, that's good.
So they're starting to catch up with demand.
Yeah, I think, you know, the sort of supply chain nightmare that has been plaguing literally everyone in the automotive world is sort of starting to ease up a bit. Everyone's, you know, all these companies are able to get their supplies a lot quicker and a lot easier. And so, you know, we'll probably start seeing, you know, you can actually like order a car and have it within a reasonable time, you know, based on, you know, the automaker still. And demand, but yeah, no. So anyway, so this one, the Grand Cherokee, the base price for this puppy was $65,710. What I drove, $73,515. You know, it's not more expensive than you would expect. It's pretty much what I expected, you know, based on everything that was in it in this price range in this market. You know, you got the third row. I wouldn't put basketball players back there. Or in the second row, to be honest, especially if you have some in the first row.
But your Daft Punk helmet will fit perfectly.
But my giant Daft Punk helmet, it's like got a big giant box. The box is, it's not that it's heavy. It's a pain in the butt to get through doors. Yeah. What do you guys think it was played Destination Charge. I don't know, whatever we're calling the game. It's still okay, $830.
Now that I'm here, I'm going to go $1,495.
Since this is a Stellantis vehicle and they've been pretty aggressive in upping their delivery charges, I'm going to say $1,795.
Boom. Do you get like a special prize if you hit it?
Oh, is that exactly it?
That was exactly it. $1,795.
Nicely done.
Yeah. I seem to remember that being the charge the last time I had one of these. So,
I don't know. What do we give you? I guess Nicole owes you $5.
I clapped. Does that count?
Yeah, perfect. Nicole clapped.
That's good enough. Your undying adulation will suffice.
Oh, the Macintosh music, the stereo system in this vehicle is unbelievable. It's so good.
Did you play with the meters and everything?
Oh, the Macintosh. The meter app?
Yeah,
really
you turn a little. It takes too long to get to those meters, by the way.
Oh,
those
yeah, it's kind of really buried cool, in the app.
Once like, you get there, it's like they're buried, awesome.
You got to find them and you turn it on. You're like, yeah, and you don't want to turn anything else on. You're like, don't you need your directions? Nah, I don't need nothing. I got the meters.
I got the meters. I'm all good.
Yeah. And it's just an app. It's the Mac. If you have one of these and you're like, where are the meters? Which seems like they should just be part of like the media, like full, you know, when you go to the media page, you just hit a button and boom, meters. No, you have to go and open another app. In the it's weird, but yeah, because I have a lot of bands that are essentially, you know, tribute bands, so I have to listen to, you know, we were doing a Talking Head show up there, and so for the sake of everyone has this, we use Spotify. Well, Spotify's audio quality is trash. It's not that great. I mean, it's good if, you know, I need to learn the notes, I need to learn where to sing, but it's just not that great. So as soon as I got in the car, I went over to Apple Music because they use a lossless compression. I just started playing just random Talking Head songs, and the live stuff just sounds outstanding. I was like just blasting it driving around. I'm like, this is amazing. So, I mean, that radio, that's kind of worth everything. You know, the sort of, you know, that lean, that angle, everything else, who cares? Bad, you know, third row isn't that, you know, most third rows, you know, not to pick on Jeep, most third rows don't fit me. Third rows doesn't have that much room for a tall person. You can't see what the buttons on top are, but you can listen to your music. It just, and you know, especially if you're using some sort of lossless compression, it sounds amazing.
Excellent. All right. Well, Nicole, now that you're with us.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. It happens.
Yes.
So what do you got?
I had, it's funny.
Well, first of all, who are you with this week?
Who am I with this week?
Yeah, because, I mean, you weren't here for the introduction.
I forgot. We haven't done the intro yet. I'm like, wait, what? Who am I with? I'm going to stick with my podcast, the Road Reflective podcast, my little passion project there that I'm having fun with. So the car that I'm in, it's kind of funny. I was in California for a few days to celebrate a friend's birthday, and I briefly drove a loaner that, by dumb luck, is exactly the same car I have in my driveway this week. But one was the manual and one was the automatic.
Oh, so you got a back-to-back.
I got a back-to-back. So what I have is the Nissan Z. California, I had the automatic. Here, I have the manual. So I drove the automatic around a little bit, which is fine. Drove the manual here. And you know what? I love the manual transmission on this car. Like, I know how to drive one. I've been driving one for years. Sometimes it can be a challenge because you get, you know, everyone has a different sort of pressure point on that clutch. You spend your first few seconds like, wait, where is it? You know, trying to get a smooth, and it takes a couple of tries and you know, you're smooth again. But the clutch is so nice. It is so easy. It's not hard on your leg if you're like in a stop and go situation. And also the gear shift is a nice short throw. I love it. I love driving this car. I'm planning on just driving in circles later on today. I'm just going to go for a drive just for the fun.
Driving in circles.
Yeah. There's this highway on ramp.
That's what sports cars are for.
Exactly. Right. Why else do you buy a sports car? So there's this highway on ramp by us that has this like giant S curves to it. It's like you go, it's just really aggressive and everyone's getting really angry because they're getting on the highway. So you have to drive with a certain sense of urgency. And I love driving cars. And I had to drive that this morning. It's like, whee, it was so much fun. So what's in this car, there's a 3.3 liter V6. It's a twin turbo with 400 horsepower and 350 pound feet of torque. So you get either, I believe it's a 9-speed automatic or the 6-speed manual. Super fun car. I mean, just really fun. It's a nice little tiny sports car that Robbie could never fit into because my husband.
No, I drove it.
Russ found it really tight. Did you find it narrow? Russ found the leg.
I drive
enough.
A BRZ. So,
okay. So you're fine.
I have long legs, but I mean, I have the seat all the way. But it's, you know what? I'm far more comfortable in my BRZ than I am in this car.
Yeah.
I feel like the interior for the Z is sort of like, eh.
Yeah,
like they made the outside look really, really cool, but then the inside, they're like, eh, forget it.
Yeah, so it was like the seats aren't bad, but they're definitely not the comfiest seats around.
No, it
was tough.
Great.
Like Russ is 6'3", and he like took a seat, and then when he, you know, he moved it back as far as it was go, but his legs, I don't know, maybe he's more legs than you are.
What's his inseam? I'm 36.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I might just That's be used terrible. To like sitting around
Maybe
with my knees already. He's always bent all the time. I just
so he's
the
yeah.
Car.
He hates it when his knees hit like the center console in the door, like when he can't straighten his leg out enough, so his knees are bonked. And
that's my life.
Yeah, so he was not comfortable with that. So after driving it a little bit in California, he got home. He's like, oh my god, wait, hold on, I gotta fold myself into this car. So, but it is really, it's fun to drive. The ride is good. Like it's, you know, this is a 2-seater. This is a little sporty car and it's not going to be like riding like a Mercedes. You're driving a little sports car. So it's a little bit rougher than what you would find in like a nice little sedan or something like that. But that's not why you're buying this. If you want that, go buy that and don't have the fun that you have when you're driving the Z. I like driving this. I feel like it does what it's supposed to do really well, which is just be a fun little sports car, something that is a hoot to drive in the twisties. It looks cute on the outside. It has, you know, the inside looks neat. Like with the one we had, the one in my driveway is that I can't find the name of the yellow. It's like yellow that they can see from outer space. It is the brightest yellow color
Ikazuchi yellow.
Okay, Ikazuchi yellow, which is, you can see it from space. Like if you'd like to look at a map of the planet right now, a little yellow glowing dot in New Hampshire, that's my house. It is so bright, but the inside is just black. It's like not very exciting. And I was like, oh, because I had one once that you can get blue paint on the outside, but there's a blue interior. The one we had in California had it made me think of like a battleship gray exterior with a black roof, and it had that really, really bright blue interior. So it was kind of neat. It's sort of this mild mannered car on the outside. You open it up, it's like, woo, it looks really cool. So I love that blue. If I was going to get this, I'd get the blue on the outside and the blue on the inside, and I'd be just a brilliant blueberry driving down the road, and I'd be very, very happy. But it does look cute. I mean, it's a fun little car. It looks cute. It has enough power. It's not like overly aggressive, but it's, I mean, it's a tiny little thing with 400 horsepower. It moves, but also tiny little thing. So, you know, I had enough room in there. Robbie, you say you can fit it in your okay. My husband thought he was going to die having to sit in the passenger seat.
Again, I think it's mostly because I'm used to having to have that seating position where my legs are hitting the sides. So.
And he's not at all. So it felt snug to him. I do like the behind, because there's one cup holder. There's a little spot though where you could like toss your phone and like your car key. And like if you had a wallet, like in the center console, but there is just behind the rear seats before the trunk, cause they're not trunk, hatchback, whatever, I guess it's still a trunk, but there's a little space. It's almost like if you imagine like a little shelf tray that's sort of behind the seat. So if you wanted to put, like, as I did, a loaf of bread back there, it holds a little loaf of bread. Or if you want to just
crumble
put like
cookie.
A large crumble cookie would also fit back there quite nicely. And it has it's not just a shelf. It has a little bit of a lip. So it's not going to like slide off and fall down behind the seats. It's like just a little shelf. So you have little things you want to throw back there that you're like, I've got two people in this car. I need to put this little tiny thing back there. I don't have to go in the trunk or whatever. You can do that. And you also can reach really easy in the hatchback, because I toss things back there. And I was really surprised. So in a moment of panic, realizing I had to drive this car to the airport with my husband and me and our luggage. And I thought, oh my God, can I get that in the car?
It all fits. It fits. I know.
Because so it did last year. I was really surprised. So we had like a carry-on, like the typical rectangular carry-on stuffed to within an inch of its life. My more square-shaped carry-on, his backpack that he uses as a carry-on, and my like tote bag, excuse me, it all fit. And it wasn't like it was a game of like Tetris, like we just boom, 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 just tossed it in there. It was fine. Honestly, we could have put more stuff in there. I was really surprised by just how much room there was in the back of this. Like that's
last summer I had one. The week before my wife and I went on a vacation, and you know, when we were flying to California, and I, you know, dropped it off at the airport on the way there, and same thing, you know, two standard size carry-ons, a couple of backpacks, and you know, assorted other detritus, and it all, it's like, I'm guessing that when they designed this, they figured, okay, you know, this is a two-seater, we want to make it good for a couple to take for a weekend road trip, you know, or whatever, you know, so it's got to at least fit this stuff that people want for, you know, that two people are going to want for a getaway.
Exactly. Like if you were fitting like great big bags in there for, you know, a week vacation, that's not going to work. Yeah. But if you're doing like a, you know, you're just doing a getaway, you've got carry-on bags, it handles that easily, which I thought was really cool, because a lot of the times in cars this small, I do remember riding, and God, I can't remember the car, but I was with another journalist and we suddenly had to drive to the airport and weren't expected to do so. And I think they gave us a Jaguar or something, but we both had like rectangular, you know, roller bags. We couldn't get them in. So we had to like rode in the front seat with this in between your legs / in your lap, because you can't move your knees far enough apart to sit it on the floor to the airport. I'm like, oh, this is super comfortable. So being able to fit two of those in the back is actually a big deal. So I like that about this, that it is a totally not practical car that still has a teeny little tiny bit of practical to it.
Just enough practical.
Just a Scotia practical. So I like the Z. It is not cheap eats though. It's pretty expensive. So all told, including an extra $1,295 for the paint that Robbie said that I can't say, whatever that name was, because that alone was $1,295. The total cost on this is $53,655. So it's not an inexpensive little sports car.
Yeah. But that, you know, that is basically a loaded.
Yes. It's all the things.
Yeah. You know. It has everything. And I mean, you've got the upgraded paint. You've got it, you know, this one is with the manual. You've got the big infotainment screen. I mean, there's nothing that you're going to want to add to this. I think this, even they added illuminated kick plates on this. You've got like, this has everything I think you can possibly get. And I mean, you've got a power driver seat. So you've got power seats. So it's not like you're sitting there like flipping, messing around with a latch or levers. So, I mean, it is very well equipped. So I don't think it's a bad deal. It's not the cheapest car on the block, but I think for what it is, I like it. And it's funny because I hear people going either one way or the other on the Z. They seem to really like it, or they think that Nissan, cause this was all new for 2023 and that's what I'm driving, 2023. Or there's people that think like, oh, they totally missed the mark. Like I see a lot of,
I feel like it's like, 90% there. For some reason, it didn't excite me like the GR86 or the GR Corolla, like those cars, like or even the Kona N. For some
Why
reason,
did those? Why did you like those better? Like,
there's
what
just
was it?
something there's something this more visceral about those vehicles driving. I mean, this vehicle,
Okay.
like, you can break it off. You can break loose the back end, like nothing.
Yeah.
The Z, you're like, oh, you know what? I want to drift. You're and you're.
Wee.
I appreciate the manual transmission that they put in there. It's just, there's just something, and you know, my dad, you know, my first car was a Datsun, and my dad had a 260Z, and I drove that across country. I used to drive that thing everywhere as a kid, so I feel like I should have like at least something that says, you know, I automatically love this vehicle, but it's just not.
It doesn't for you.
There's just something, I don't know what it is. It's hard to put my finger on it. And you know, it has 400 horsepower. Like, oh, you know, the BRZ only has 288 or something, but for, or the GR8, or, you know, or the GR86, whichever one you want to, you pick. But for some reason, I drove that GR86 through Angeles Crest Highway, and I was like, oh my
You
God,
loved
this.
it.
And
It
then I
spoke
drove the
to you.
GR Corolla, and I was like, oh my God, both of these are just like, for some reason, Toyota did something that Nissan just missing. And if you haven't driven those Toyotas, you're gonna love the Z.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is if you haven't driven those cars, you're gonna get in the Z and you're like, oh my God, it's got a manual transmission, it's rear-wheel drive, it's got a lot of power, you know, I can you know, break the back end off, you know, free, you know, whenever I want. You know, it's it hark you know, the design is very much, you know, it's like a hodgepodge of all the Z's over the years, and it has the world's largest gas cap door.
Does it?
It's so big. It's like when I went and got gas in it, I was like, wow, this is a really big door. It just feels like it's so big compared to like the little hole you put gas in. It's just because the way the body is, like, because of the way the design is, like, it just, I think it just had to make a giant door. So it's just like,
Just giant
Wah!
thing.
And then you put your little gas pump in there. If you buy a Z, I'm happy for you. I think you're gonna love it. If you drive it around, you automatically love it. That's awesome. Good for you. They're just, for me, again, this is for me. It just, there's, I feel like there's just something missing. Like, I liked it. Like, the more I had it, the more I liked it. And then the more I did, I was like, I don't. Maybe it's the sitting position. I don't know. Maybe it is the lack of, like,
The
maybe it
lack
doesn't
of
need.
knee room that you don't
Maybe it
think you
needs
need,
more.
but
Maybe
maybe
it
you
needs more
need.
knee room.
Maybe
Maybe
some
it
more
does
knee
need more.
room.
Maybe it's something. I don't know. It's just so close. And again, most people are going to be ecstatic if they buy this vehicle. They're going to go around. They're
Yeah.
going to be super happy. I want more people to buy the Z than anything else in the Nissan lineup, because that tells Nissan, hey, we should make more manual transmission vehicles, and hey, for the next version, we should update this. You know, like the way Subaru and Toyota did with the BRZ and the GR86, where they're like, hey, let's make this a little bit better without losing the character of the vehicle.
Yeah.
I want Nissan to do that with the
I
Z.
hope
I
I
want
keep,
them.
you know, because I feel like these small little cars like this, like sports cars like this, are sort of a narrow percentage of the population that wants these
Oh
fun little
yeah,
sporty
tiny,
cars. Like,
tiny
it's
niche.
a tiny little fragment, but it's a fragment, like a segment of people who are just really passionate about driving.
Yeah, it's
You
the
don't buy this
enthusiasts. These are
car
the,
just, yeah, you don't buy this just because you need a grocery getter. Like, you might use it that way, but that's not
And you
why
can
you
fit
buy
your
it.
groceries in the back there.
And you
You
could use this
can.
as a grocery
Yeah.
getter
Well,
easily.
you
You
know what?
really
All
totally
three,
could.
all four of the sort of enthusiasts, like, not gonna break your, you know, the bank. This starts at $40,000.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not the GR Corolla. That's not really. But like a Miata, you can put some groceries in a Miata.
Yeah.
I've
I'm
done
done.
grocery. You can
You
put a
could
grocery
do it.
in a BRZ. You can put groceries in a Z. You can do all the things you need to do. Like, I put 8 foot long, like 2x2 pieces of wood, in my BRZ. Now, I had to put the back seats down. I had to shove them in the front, and they came out the passenger window, but I was able to do it. So you can go to Home Depot and these vehicles.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and that's the thing, you know, you
all the
talked about,
life things.
you talked about the price, Nicole, you know, and
Yeah.
that's, you know, I think that's the for the Z proto spec, which is you know, limited edition. You know, that's the only one that's available in that yellow.
Is it really? It just says
Yeah, you
Z
can't.
performance on this one. I didn't realize it was the proto spec because it just says performance.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the the build and price, and you cannot get that yellow on the regular Z Performance. It's only on the Proto spec.
Okay, I didn't say Proto spec on there. Sorry about that, guys.
When they showed
that.
The concept a couple of years ago before they unveiled the production version,
yeah.
that yellow was the color they had on there.
They gave me one of 240 units produced nationally as a press car?
Yep.
Boy, somebody could have driven this that owned it.
I think you can just get
and eventually somebody
one.
Will.
Yeah, that's true.
But the Z Sport, starts at $41,000.
Which is more affordable.
And you get the same engine. Going to the performance, for $51,000, you go from 18 to 19 inch wheels, you get bigger brakes, and there's a few other upgrades, a limited slip rear diff. But even the Z Sport is fantastic.
Yeah, and, that's the one.
At $42,000, with delivery, that's a.
I love this little car.
It's actually a really good deal.
I even ended up behind this morning on the highway. I was behind a little Miata, and I love the Miata, but it was funny driving behind this little Miata. I was thinking, I'm like, this is actually a little bit more usable than the Miata in terms of the little space inside, like the trunk and stuff. And I think this is a nice little, I love the Miata, but I have to have a little bit of room, just a little bit of like versatility with it. I'm like, this is it. This would be like, between the two, like love the Miata. Don't everyone send me hate mail. I love the Miata.
But the Miata has unlimited headroom.
Yes. Just
unlimited.
Yeah,
it does, but only if you live in
I mean,
New York,
I can't own one because I can't sit in it when it doesn't have the unlimited headroom.
See? Yeah, you can't sit in it, but also you only have unlimited headroom up here about 3 months of the year, then you're closed right back in.
No. You can drive it more than 3 months of the year there. I mean, it gets 40 degrees in March.
Heater.
As long as it's a minimum of 40 degrees, you can drive it anytime. That's what I do.
Who's Siri am I hearing?
I'm sorry. I don't know why that turned on.
I just hilarious. I'm like, someone's Siri has been like, let me Google that for you.
I never used Siri on this computer and I forgot. I didn't even realize
I thought
it was
me.
On.
I'm like, what am I hearing? I'm hearing the little voice. I really like the Z. I like this when it first came out. It was up for the North American, I was going to say car truck utility. It's just one of those car of the year last year. And it got really close to winning last year. And I thought I had it did well. It was well enough to like that it got that far through the process, and there's a lot of competition there. So that does speak to how well it was received overall. And I like the Z, and I love the blue. I don't know what it's called. I just want to drive a blue Z that's all blue, inside, outside.
Have you driven the GR86 or BRZ yet?
I'm trying to think he's like, you haven't driven the ones I like, so don't say that yet.
No, I'm just curious if you have a
I'm trying to honestly remember if I've driven them, Robbie. I cannot remember.
I think
if
you'd remember.
Those.
There's like there's some cars like the Giulia. Like when the first time I drove the Giulia, I was like, oh my gosh,
I'll never forget.
Like we went to dinner that night it was the World Car of the Year thing, and we were driving all these cars, and then we're sitting there at dinner, and finally one of the other journalists is like, can we just talk about the Giulia for a second?
Yeah, that was beautiful. The Giulia's, I that's the car I would buy. I was gonna buy a car right now.
Like 6 months, I'd buy it for a good set.
I'd buy it and be ready to have a spare car in the back just in case, but I would buy it.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. All right. Anything else on the Z?
No, that's about it on the Z. Buy it in the blue. Just buy it in the blue. Trust me, people. Blue. Blue all inside, right. Blue outside.
Did I do that?
Yeah, that's a good combination. I like that. All right. Well, I had the 2023 Volkswagen Taos SEL 4Motion.
That's a Z competitor.
Well, it does have four wheels. And there is drive to the rear wheels sometimes.
So totally a competitor.
Yeah. And it's internal combustion. So yeah, it's a perfect competitor.
Practically the same car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's not.
Because like anyone's like, what? No, we're joking, people.
The Taos is VW's entry level crossover that they launched last year. That it's based on a vehicle that they've had in, I think, in the Brazilian market or South American market for a couple of years before that. And they brought it to North America. And it's actually quite nice, especially at the starting price, $24,000. It's a pretty decent value. It's good size, got lots of room in the both. It's a two row, compact.
For the crossover money, it's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for $24,000, it is a pretty sweet deal. The problem is the one I had was not $24,000. Yeah, it was the top end trim level, which is the SEL. So you can get it in an S, SE. I think even the SE, which is $29,000, I think would be a pretty reasonable deal. When you get up to the SEL, now you're kind of pushing, the price point for this particular vehicle. It's not bad. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with it. It's a 1.5 liter four cylinder turbo with a 7-speed VW DSG, their twin clutch transmission, which, I've always thought, VW's DCTs are, probably the best of the breed in the market. They've been doing them for a long time. We had one in our old Jetta TDI sport wagon. We had the DSG in there, and it was a good transmission. And so that's what you get in the Taos. I like the way it looks. In fact, I actually prefer the design of the Taos to the Tiguan, which is just slightly larger. I think that the proportions work a little bit better on the Taos, because the Tiguan that we get in North America, in other markets, they actually sell two versions of the Tiguan. There's a standard wheelbase and a longer wheelbase version. And here we only get the longer wheelbase version. And I've always thought that one, the proportions looked a little off on the long wheelbase one.
It looks wonky.
Yeah, it does. So I actually like the way the Taos looks better than the Tiguan. The one that I had, I said, was the SEL. So it has all the options on there. It's got 19-inch wheels. It's got all-season tires. It's got a full suite of driver assist systems in there. It's got 10.25-inch digital instrument cluster, similar size center touchscreen for the infotainment system. The infotainment system works reasonably well. The voice control has gotten better. It's still not as good as it should be, but it's not quite as useless.
It doesn't make you as stabby as it used to.
Yeah. But the CarPlay and Android Auto work fine in there. So you can always use that as well. The ID4, which has, all touch controls for everything. There's a physical volume knob, some physical controls for climate control in this thing. So that's all good. The SE, has VW's what they're now calling Cloud Tex seating, which is their faux leather. And I think VW's always done a good job with their non-animal based leather like seating surfaces. That's what we had. They used to call it VTEX. That's what we had in our Jetta, and it was great. It felt nice. It was durable, easy to clean. The SEL that I had actually has leather seating surfaces, which I think are kind of probably unnecessary in this thing.
Yeah.
I think probably my biggest complaint about the interior is there's this large plastic trim piece that spans the dashboard, that goes from door to door, and it's gray and very shiny, very glossy. And it frankly looks really cheap.
It's right above the infotainment screen.
Yeah. Well, it kind of surrounds the infotainment screen. It spans across to all the way across the passenger side. You know, and it just looks cheap. Yeah, you know, and if this was a $24,000 Taos, I'd have no issue with it.
Like, all right, fine.
You know, even a $28,000-$29,000 for the SEL, I would probably be fine with it. But when you get to the price point that this one was at, it becomes a little bit more of a challenge to justify it. So yeah, mm-hmm. it surrounds the infotainment screen. Like I said, it goes door. Actually, the same material stretches into the door panels as well and surrounds the door handles.
I just managed to grab an image. I'm like, where is this? And I can see what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The design itself is fine. It's just, I think that if they would just change that one piece, that material, take that.
They don't even have to change it. Just buff it down.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Change the color and the finish on it. It would be much better because the rest of it is fine. You know.
Yeah.
You know, it's comfortable to drive. You know, ride quality is decent. You know, the SEL I had the panoramic moonroof in there. The seats are comfortable. For the rear seat, you know, at the back of the center console, there's vents back there. So rear seat passengers can get comfortable as well. They can adjust the vents and open and close them. So they're fine. Get a couple of USB-C ports in the front of the center console. There's a nice storage bin at the base of the center stack. Good size storage in the doors as well. So you can, you know, if you've got one of those big, massive water bottles like my wife uses, you know, it'll actually fit in there, which is not the case in a lot of the cars we drive. So, you know, she could fit that in there when we went to the lake on the 4th of July. So, you know, it's a really nice vehicle. And I think if they just, you know, took a look at some of the interior materials, made some adjustments there, you know, so it didn't quite look so cheap, then it would be much better. It'd be much closer to justifying the price point, which on the one that I drove was all in $36,225.
No, that's too much for the Taos.
That's too much. Yeah, that's a little bit much.
Buy the entry level Taos. Get a little bit of sandpaper. Sand the shiny bit down.
That'll make it look so much better.
I don't understand why.
Just what it needs.
Automakers keep putting these really shiny things in there because they pick up fingerprints. They blind you. Like, I forget what car I was in, and it was blinding me. Like, when I was driving around, like, the sun hits it a certain way. Like, oh gosh, like, stop it. Just stop. Stop putting shiny things in.
Stop making everything look like all shiny and
piano. That piano
and
black.
Piano
that,
black.
No, stop it. Come on. I don't know who likes it. Somebody likes it. I don't think any auto journalists like it because we're always just like, ugh.
I think you probably would actually want to go with the mid-level SE. At 28.9, so 20, you know, with delivery, it's around 30, gonna be around 30 grand because the base S model doesn't have App Connect, which is the smartphone integration, the CarPlay and Android Auto. You have to step up to the SE to get that.
It just doesn't have, oh, come on,
yeah,
come on.
So, but come you know, on. I think at that price point, I'd be fine with it. You know, but I think the SEL is, you know, probably a little bit much.
It's too much. And they should, the CarPlay and Android Auto should just be standard on every vehicle.
Yeah.
Totally regardless of the trim level. Yeah. Don't make people jump up to the SE just to get CarPlay.
Yeah. That's a
come on.
Of a thing to do.
Exactly. That's a stinker of a thing.
So you want to take a stab at the delivery charge?
Ooh.
$895.
Oh, I was going to say $895. I'll say $1,195.
You're going to be right.
He's closer. It's $1,295.
Ah, yeah.
Of course.
So I don't win $5 from Nicole, so.
No. Yeah. Oh, damn it.
but you do get 3 years of 24-hour roadside assistance and 2 years of free scheduled maintenance with the Taos. So that's cool. A good thing. Fuel economy was okay at 27 miles per gallon. And this, like I said, this is, you know, all-wheel drive. I think if you get the front wheel drive version, you know, it's going to be, you know, a couple miles per gallon more than that. So, you know, it's a nice vehicle. You know, yeah. I think, you know, go for that sweet spot right in the middle and you'll be fine.
And you'll be just peachy.
Yeah. I drove the Taos to the launch program here in the Bay Area. And it was one of those crazy windy days where I couldn't even stand outside. When you try to open the door, it just slams shut on you. Mm-hmm. It was nice. And it did really well, especially in the wind. Cause you see a lot of cars just get like just destined. You can tell, you can see all the design flaws in the wind, which I'll talk about next week with the car I'm driving right now.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, my complaints about the top trim level, you know, don't just apply to the Taos. It applies to a lot of the vehicles in like this price range and, you know, segment. You know, generally I would recommend in most cases, just avoid the top trim level, because that's where, you know, that's where they're, you know, the automakers are maximizing their profit, and you're not necessarily getting a whole lot more for your money. It's not generally not a great, not a great value.
At that point, you're typically better off just buying like the next vehicle up in the market.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like exactly. The like the base trim of, unless it's, unless it's the next vehicle up is like ginormous or something.
Yeah. But you can get like a nicer vehicle with more standard equipment, with better standard equipment, instead of buying, you know, a lower tier vehicle with all this, you know, all these options.
Always aim for the, you know, one of the mid trim levels, because that's usually your best value option. So, all right. So that is the 2023 Taos SEL 4Motion. All righty. Let's get into some of the stuff. So last week there was something I intended to put on the rundown that I completely forgot to put on there. And I think, Nicole, I believe that you actually got to drive the Buick Envista, right?
I did, yes. And I haven't had a chance to watch this video, Sam.
Well, you would know what's in there because it's your video.
Oh, it's mine.
Yeah. It's one of the videos that you did.
I didn't want to click it while listening to you guys, because I'm like, now I won't be able to. Oh, it is mine.
This was the exterior walk around.
I actually do know what this is. Okay, yeah.
So tell us about the Envista.
So the Envista is the latest Buick, and it sits at the bottom of their lineup. So it's their most entry level vehicle, and it's got kind of new styling. Like, people keep saying, oh, it's just an Encore GX. The Encore GX looks a little bit more upright, a little bit boxier, a little bit more traditional SUV. This gets a little bit sleeker. I mean, it's not a sports car, guys, but it does have a little bit more of a coupe-like sort of rear to it, the way the roof comes down. But what's nice is it doesn't cut too much into headroom. Like, you can still sit back there the way they've done it. It looks like it's smaller in the back and in the cargo area than it actually is. It's actually pretty roomy. The thing that everyone is complaining about here is the fact that they think that the engine is the most horrible, awful, very bad, no good engine that's ever been put in a car ever. It has the same engine.
What is wrong with these people?
And it's the same thing. Have either of you guys driven, the Trax?
I haven't driven the Trax, but I've driven the Encore GX, which I believe also has the same engine in it.
I think the Encore GX has the same engine. For some reason, I didn't think it did.
I've driven something with this engine in it.
You've driven something. This is it. So did you like this engine?
I was fine with it. Yeah, especially for an entry level, relatively affordable vehicle, I'm fine with that. I actually like these small 3-cylinder turbo engines. Yeah, the Encore GX, the old Encore, the GX.
Encore GX.
The Encore GX. Yeah, there's two versions of this engine. It's a 1.2 and a 1.3 liter, and I've driven it with both.
You've driven it with both. So that's the big gripe. And the funniest thing is seeing people just sort of griping in general about it. I was kind of like, have you driven it yet? Like, have you driven this car? So I think it actually drives really nicely. Like, I liked how this drove. I thought it was a great car. This isn't a sports car. It's not going to drive that way, but it's still, this engine is just fine. It's absolutely positively just fine. I didn't have an issue with it. And I like the styling. I like how this looks. I think they did a slick job with it. I think that this little 1.2 liter turbo 3-cylinder, it's 136 horsepower, which freaks everyone out, but it's a nice car to drive. It's responsive enough.
Where's everyone going in a hurry? And I don't understand.
It's like, it's perfectly fine. It's paired to a 6-speed automatic, and there's only front wheel drive. So you can't get it with all wheel drive. So if that's what you want, then you got to just jump up one level to the Encore GX. But it's intended to be like a new entry level. And it's sort of to show off that, I guess, where Buick hopes to be going, where they're heading towards. And, you know, I think it does what it's supposed to do very well. And I really liked it. It was funny because I, even just talking to other members of the media, like, well, you know, this isn't cool enough. This isn't fast enough. This isn't sporty enough. This isn't fast, you know, all these things. I'm like, but it's really good. It has a 19.
Yeah, but the Taos, it's like essentially going up against the Taos, and the Taos isn't sporty.
Right?
In no way, shape, or form.
It's not. And I think the interior on this is nicer. Like, everyone's like, oh, well, it's not a luxury car. No, it's not a luxury car. This is the entry level vehicle.
It's a 24,000?
I think it's like 24,000. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a $24,000 car. Come on.
So it's,
so it's cheaper than the Taos.
Yes. And I think the inside, I think the inside of this is really nice. Like, it has a, it has an 8-inch instrument cluster and an 11-inch infotainment touchscreen, and it's all like in one panel. So it's like this one 19-inch panel that runs along the dashboard. It looks really nice and clean and neat. It has wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto standard. There's available wireless charging across the lineup. It does a good job. Like, I like this. And on the whole lineup, no matter which, I think there's three trims altogether, all three of them come in at under $30,000. So unless you start piling on, but the base price on all three is under 30 grand. Even the Avenir, which is the sort of the premium sub-brand badge, I guess they would call it within the Buick lineup, even the Avenir, under $30,000. So it's a well-priced vehicle for what you get. And it's, you're just, I feel like if you're looking to just sort of level up and you want something a little bit nicer, like you can't go full luxury, but you want to sort of step towards that, this is a great option. If you're someone who also, I don't need a giant SUV, I just want to be able to have a nice little crossover that has a little bit of extra room when I have more than usual to throw in the trunk. I want to actually be able to put those two large suitcases back there, not like a Z that can only hold, you know, two carry-on bags. This is going to do it. I think this is a good, I liked this vehicle. I'm not sure what kind of reviews are going to come out on this, but I like this. I do.
Well, you know, I think one of the most important things to note, you know, is that with, like, this is front wheel drive only. I think, I don't think there's an all wheel drive version.
No, just front wheel drive.
It does have a, as you mentioned, a 6-speed automatic transmission. In all of the other applications where they use this 3-cylinder turbo with front wheel drive, the Encore GX, the Trailblazer, I don't know about the new Trax, but and certainly in the Encore GX and the Trailblazer, for front wheel drive versions, they have a CVT.
Right.
So this is actually
a big
better.
Difference.
Yeah.
This drives it. And honestly, I think the Trax drives okay. I think the Trax is fine for what it is. It gets noisy because of that CVT. This does not get noisy because it doesn't have a CVT. So this is genuinely, I kept. And drive impressions actually hadn't lifted on this. In fact, they don't until July 11th. So Sam, don't post this just yet. I thought we'll double check.
I already saw people post.
Maybe it did. Maybe I have the wrong date, but we'll double check. But either way, they people, you know, I drove the Trax this garage. I'm like, have you driven this? Did you actually drive this one? If you didn't drive this one, then don't tell me it's a terrible experience yet. This is a different. Yeah. Having it paired to an automatic transmission instead of having it paired to a CVT makes a difference in how this drives. And people need to give it a chance. Like, don't
drive it.
Just drive it. Like with any car, we always say, all three of us, test drive the car. And this is, if ever there was a case for not letting just what the fanboys or anti-fanboys, I guess they would be, say, don't just look at the power on this and go, oh my God, can't possibly drive that.
This is one of the things when I worked at Wired as a tech reporter, where we really went into is that the specs don't matter if the thing doesn't deliver what it's supposed to do. It can have the best specs in the world, but when you go to use it, it doesn't do the thing it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Then what's the point? You know, it's like, again, it's like putting a Ferrari engine in a Geo Metro. That's what I used to say. I'm like, you can't, it's still, you know, the car's not going to go in really that much faster. It's still going to topple over. It's going to do all these things. And sometimes you know, if you look at the specs, you're like, oh, this isn't going to be great. But then you use the product and you're like, oh, this is exactly what this should be doing. It doesn't need to be faster. It doesn't need, you know, all this extra RAM or all this extra whatever. And it's the same thing with cars. Like some cars you're like, oh, well, you know, for some people, every car should drive like a, like a Type R, and every car should have 400 horsepower, and every car should have a manual transmission. I'm like, no, You can't. Every car should drive like it's ready to hit the track. That's not what
every car is. That's why there's so many different cars out there, because not every car is supposed to drive that way. Not every person wants a car that drives that way. So when you see someone saying like, oh, it's not enough power. Okay, just take a step back. And if everything about the car, like you're looking at it and thinking, the price appeals to me, the looks appeal to me, it has the right number of, you know, it has the right cargo amount for me, it looks like it has the right seating for me, it can handle the passengers, this looks like it can handle my everyday life, and I like this, drive it. Because if it checks all the boxes when you're reading about it and looking at it, get behind the wheel of it. Because if you're reading, that's the thing with reviews, like everyone has a different point of view on things, and you might get in it and hate it. Like, I'm not saying everyone's going to love this. But give a car a chance and drive it for yourself, because everybody comes into it with a different perspective. And if you're reading something from someone who is an enthusiast, if you're a performance enthusiast, you are going to hate this. That is not what this car is.
This isn't the car you're going to buy.
Don't go drive this. This is going to feel like a miserable, not fast enough, not powerful enough, not aggressive enough. That is a very specific case right there.
Yeah. So if you're interested in a Z, don't even look at this.
Yeah.
If you're going for the Z, skip the segment.
Yeah.
But otherwise, skip this if you're going for the Z. If you're not going for the, if you hated the Z, then you might like this. So it's just, I there's so much hate for this engine. Like, everyone is freaking out about this powertrain. Like, constantly, I'm like, you guys, drive it.
Settle down.
I didn't hear those complaints with respect to the Trax. And the Trax has the exact same powertrain, including the 6-speed. The new Trax does not have the CVT.
Okay.
So you get the 6-speed and the same engine in the Trax. People weren't complaining about the Trax.
No. Why would they be complaining about it? Because I found the Trax to be louder in not good ways. Like, you could hear more of the engine. Because it's Buick, because it's supposed to be more premium brand, you don't hear it. It sounds quieter. So it's a different experience than driving that. I liked it. I liked it. Yeah. I feel like when the reviews come out, I'm cringing. I'm like, oh God, is everyone going to hate this? Because I genuinely like this.
It's like the first, before I broke my ankle, my left ankle, a long time ago. And so I couldn't drive our car. The only car we had at the time was the BRZ at that point. This is when we still lived in the city. So when I needed to get around, sometimes I needed to go to meetings outside the city. I would use like a car share program, like Zipcar or something like that. And one day, the only car that was available was the Kia Soul. And I was like, oh, Kia Soul, fine. And I hadn't driven the Kia Soul. You know, it's like, this is underpowered box. Within 5 minutes, I loved that vehicle. Just fell in love with the Kia Soul because it's exactly what it needs to be. It's exactly what it only has like 147 horsepower, 132 pound-feet of torque for the new one. So I was driving the old one, which had been in a fleet. I love the Kia Soul. Just unabashedly love that vehicle. It's exactly what it needs to be in that segment. It's inexpensive. It has just enough power to get around town. You have all this room to put stuff in. It's quirky. Look, the only thing I liked about it was the way it looked before I actually got in. And then I drove it. I was like, this is exactly what this car needs to be. It doesn't need 400 horsepower. Doesn't have a manual. You know, you can get at the time, you can still get one with a manual transmission because my cousin's mom has one. He bought her one with a manual. I was like, oh my God.
Really?
But yeah, it's, you know, I think you get in the car, drive it, and see whether or not, you know, you like it or not. Again, if you're the person who's like, well, I only drive M3s or Zs or GRDs.
That's not the car for you.
Or Audis. And yeah, maybe that's not the.
Yeah. Maybe this isn't the direction you should be going.
Yeah. But
yeah.
All right. So if you need a stylish, relatively stylish entry level crossover, give the Invisto a look.
Give the Invisto a try. Take it for a drive.
All right. We have complained quite a bit over the years about colors or absence of color on a lot of new cars. And the fact that if you go to a car dealership, what you usually find is a lot of silver and black and gray and some white. I think, from now on, everybody should buy Fiats because there's not going to be any more gray Fiats.
No more gray Fiats.
Yay!
Just funny because we owned a gray. We leased a gray Fiat because that's what they
did. You really?
Yeah.
Did you lease a gray Fiat just because it was the only color you could get?
Pretty much. We were the engine had exploded.
Oh, well, that doesn't
like a catastrophic explosion, and we needed one right away. We didn't have a lot of money. I was the only person working. My wife was in school. We live in San Francisco. You know, $130 a month lease. Boom. You get a gray Fiat.
Done.
So, yeah, Fiat has they put together a fun little video featuring Olivier Francois, the CEO of Fiat, where they take the new Fiat 600, which is looks like it's kind of a replacement for the 500X, slightly larger crossover than the 500, and I think it's gray to start with, and they dip it into a giant tank of orange paint with a crane, and comes out and he declares, "Yep, no more gray Fiats." So I think that is very good news from Fiat, and hopefully we will see other brands follow Fiat's lead on this one.
I think it'd be nice. I like cars that are fun colors. I don't care what you're driving. I mean, only some cars colors. Can pull off like, you know, what's like the purples and the greens that are like on cars like the Mustang and the Challenger, but give us fun colors on cars.
Absolutely. Definitely need more color.
I want more color.
Then next up, VW recently, I think both of you got a chance to look at the new ID. Buzz in California that's mm-hmm. coming to the U.S. And we're getting a longer version with three rows of seats. But there's already some two-row ID. Buzzes in Austin, Texas. They just landed there recently. And VW is testing them. These are their automated ID. Buzzes. So prior to the meltdown of Argo AI last fall, Argo was working on two fronts with Ford, with automated driving escapes. And in Europe, they had their system, their automated driving system on the ID. Buzz with Volkswagen, where they were going to deploy those as robo-taxis. Well, obviously, VW is no longer working with Argo. Mm-hmm. They've now switched their allegiance to using the Mobileye system. And the first batch of 10 Mobileye-equipped ID. Buzzes are now driving around in Austin, Texas. So I think next time we go to Austin, Nicole, we're gonna have to see if we can get a ride.
We need to get another ride. We absolutely need to find a way to get a ride in one of these.
Yeah.
It'd be so much easier getting it out of these two.
Oh, absolutely. Much easier than getting in and out of the back of a Bolt.
Yeah, we when I was in Korea, they had carnivals. They had the carnival as a taxi, and it was awesome.
As your taxi.
Yeah, it's so much easier. You get in, you get out. It's easy peasy, as opposed to a regular car.
Nice.
Vans, man. Vans are the future.
They are. They're the best form factor.
They are the best form factor.
So, yeah, VW, they're using the Mobileye system on there now with Luminar LiDAR. And they said, they are targeting launching commercial services with these vans by 2026. VW said they have no plans to operate their own ride hailing service like Cruise and Waymo are doing. They will lease these or sell these to fleet operators that want to run ride hailing services with them. If you want to get in that business, give VW a call, and a couple of years from now, they should have something for you, hopefully.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
That'd be a side hustle. We should do that, Sam.
You got a pile of money to set on fire?
Sure. I got money to set on fire right over here. Let me grab that.
All right. We have talked repeatedly. We've had show titles where we have said we have extolled the virtues of the Ford Maverick, particularly the Ford Maverick XL with the standard hybrid powertrain, and what a wonderful bargain it is. When it came out, it started at $20,000. That's how much my next door neighbors paid for their Maverick XL hybrid, 20 grand. Well, 2024 model year is coming up, and you can't get a Maverick XL hybrid for 20 grand anymore.
Womp womp.
Womp.
In fact,
womp.
It's now going to cost you a minimum of $26,495. So that's a $6,500 increase in 2 years.
For
a $20,000 car. That for a car that started at $20,000. It's such a huge, and I understand we didn't realize people would want this car. They would want a hybrid powertrain. I'm like, what were you doing? who's go over there? Who's doing like research at Ford? Get it together, people.
It's sad because I think so many people, that's a large part. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to recommend it, but that was a large part of it was that.
It was an amazing value.
That amazing price point. You're like, well, now it's not so amazing.
Well, like all these people are ordering it. So we're just going to.
We're just going to jack up the price and cost of things and blah, blah, blah.
So the order books for the model, the 2023 model year have been closed for a while. If you manage to find one on a dealer lot somewhere, which is extremely unlikely, you can still get at least sticker price, starting, I think, about $22,000 for the 2023 Maverick XL Hybrid. But for model year 24, the base, the standard engine across all the Mavericks is the two liter turbo, the 2 liter EcoBoost with like 250 horsepower. And that is going to start at $24,995. And the hybrid on any trim level is going to be an additional $1,500. So it's no longer standard. It's $1,500 extra. So you're looking at $26,500 now to get a base XL hybrid, base XL hybrid. And
basically.
I mean, at least they include cruise control now. So
I don't care about cruise control.
I don't need cruise control.
I think I've talked about how much I don't use cruise control. Unless
I don't
it's
use
adaptive.
Cruise control. All. I never use it. I thought I was the only person who never used it. I was like, cruise control is great. And I'm like, I never use it.
When I got my Honda Civic in the 1991, my 90 Honda Civic, I had cruise control and I used it exactly once.
The entire time I
don't use cruise control. I use adaptive cruise control on, when I'm reviewing cars. But we have cruise control. We don't have adaptive. We have regular cruise control on our Kona. Never use it. Never. No. It's like, what's the point?
I guess if
I was in the middle of nowhere and there's no other cars around, I guess I could use it. But that's never happening.
I feel like whenever I have cruise control, I'm forever futzing around with it. Like, oh, I need to go faster than I set it for.
With traditional cruise control systems, because it just holds the car at one speed. If you're doing a long trip on an empty highway, it's fine. But, adaptive cruise is so much better. But apparently, something like 80% of the demand for the Maverick was for the hybrid, and Ford apparently just can't build that many hybrid powertrains. And so
they can build 1 billion F-150s. They can figure out a way. Come on. If you can build 1,000 F-series trucks a minute, you can figure out a way. It's just like, so many people want this. Let's charge more for it.
Yeah, I don't know. There's got to be. I mean,
it's basic economics.
Like,
I know.
I feel like it's just going to cut. I don't know. Is it going to get people to go to the non-hybrid one? Are they somehow sitting on a million of them with a gas engine? Just and they're like, let's get rid of some of these.
you got to push the hybrid one. You got to push the EcoBoost. No one's buying the EcoBoost. That was the 40 miles per gallon for a fun little truck that you could just do things with.
Awesome. It was awesome.
That's a shame. But
it makes sad day in Cardam.
So basically now, Ford is taking the markup that dealers were charging.
Dealers
were charging a markup on these things. And, so with a $6,500 price increase in 2 years, Ford is taking that markup away from the dealers and just
said, what percentage is that?
$6,500 in 2 years. Gosh, that's a lot.
That's over 30%.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I mean, when you said like in 2 years, really? Wow.
Yeah, that's a shame. I'll be curious to see how this affects Maverick sales and Hyundai Santa Cruz sales. Will we see more people say,
because now
I'm going to go for a Santa Cruz instead? Because, if it's going to cost me the same, might as well get the other one.
Right.
That's a good time for Toyota to put out a small truck with a hybrid powertrain.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Undercut. Dun, dun. Because they can make hybrids
across and put a pickup bed on the back.
Yeah, just throw a pickup bed on the back. Literally, just take one of those things, throw a pickup bed in the back with a hybrid powertrain.
Corolla cross up. I don't know. What would you call that one?
The Stout.
Scout, you said?
The
Stout. Stout.
Yeah, that would work.
See, that could work.
That's a bummer.
Either way, it's kind of sad that we don't have the Maverick. It's still a good option.
We can no longer unequivocally recommend the Maverick XL Hybrid.
Because the price the price was a large part. I mean, there's a lot to recommend about that 32%. Vehicle. The price was definitely a huge part of it. So having the price go up definitely makes it less of an easy, like, it's no longer a no-brainer. There are, like you said, there's competition now.
Over 30% markup. In
that's
2 years.
Huge.
Yeah.
30%. That's insane.
Well, maybe the best option now is instead of either the Maverick or the Santa Cruz, just wait for Stellantis to finally bring the Rampage that we talked about before.
Rampage.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a styling truck. That's a good looking little truck. Yeah. And it's about the same size.
I'm really angry, but kind of happy, but mostly angry about people are starting to pick up on key trucks. You know, they're importing them over from Japan. Mm-hmm. And Korea, like those tiny little trucks, the little key cars, but you can get a truck or a little van. And that's become a thing that, like, regular people, and you've seen in regular newspapers, I'm like, no, the prices are going to go up. Yeah. Which just shows that people, like, are using these as actual work trucks, because, like, I don't need another F-150 for my farm. I just need something to, like, haul some grain around, or haul this other thing, or get from point A to point B with, like, a couple things of hay or straw, and I don't, I need something small and quick. And there's clearly a market for these small trucks. And then Ford's like, oh, we're just going to charge them more.
I feel like
they could have held out. But now, they're going to be able to make the hybrids, but it's not like the price is going to come back down.
No.
Oh, they're never come down. My gosh, that's madness right there. Never. Madness. What ultimate madness. Universe are you living in?
Anyway, we look forward to a Toyota Stout hybrid. Or a Rampage.
All right. Let's move on. Did either of you know Peter Horbury?
I never met Peter Horbury.
I do not.
Oh, very nice guy. Very sweet guy. Unfortunately, Peter died this past week. He was in China in business. Peter came to fame in the 90s as the head of design at Volvo. And he was the one responsible for taking Volvo design, up until Peter took over design at Volvo. Volvo's had the reputation of looking like the box that they were shipped in.
That's a good description.
Yeah. And so Peter was the one who finally brought some design flair to the Volvo brand. And it's been going ever since. And he led Volvo design for quite a long time. And then eventually, as at that time, Ford already owned Volvo. I think they bought Volvo car in early 90s. Mm-hmm. So eventually, he moved over to Ford. Became head of exterior design for Ford globally. And I think he reported to Maury Callum, or actually to Jay Mays. And then after Ford sold off Volvo to Geely in China, he went back to Volvo, stayed with the Volvo brand, and led their modern design. So what we think of as Volvo design today, with the Thor's hammer lights and everything, Peter Horbury was in charge of that. And then eventually moved up to become head of design for, I think, across the entire Geely group. Most recently, he's been executive vice president of design for Lotus, which in the last couple of years also came under the Geely umbrella. And sadly, at the age of 72, this past week, Peter died. I met him on quite a few occasions, had some interesting conversations with him. Really nice guy. Everybody I've ever talked to that ever worked with him had nothing but nice things to say about him. Always really interesting to talk to. And it's sad that I won't get to see him again. The last time I saw him was, I think, in 2019, before the pandemic. I think we were on a flight back to Detroit from the LA Auto Show, I think, and I was chatting with him for a while. So he's gone. But hopefully, he imparted some of his wisdom onto the rest of the design team at across the various Geely brands. We'll see them continue to do good things in the future. All right. We've been talking seemingly continuously over the last month or so about the North American charging standard. The latest brand to jump on the bandwagon this week, Mercedes-Benz.
Dun, dun, dun.
Chips keep falling. So, what are we up to now? What's the list, Sam?
Ford, GM, Rivian, Volvo and Polestar, Mercedes-Benz. So Mercedes is the first of the German automakers to do it.
Okay.
Along with, you know, the usual announcement of starting in 24, you know, Mercedes cars will have support for superchargers with an adapter, and starting from 25, they'll switch over to installing the NACS connector. But back at CES this year, Mercedes also announced that they were going to build out a charging network of their own starting later this year. So there will be a Mercedes-Benz fast charging network.
So is that just going to use the NACS connectors then?
At least with CCS. I reached out to Mercedes-Benz. They said that their chargers will have NACS connectors on them, but they couldn't say yet whether that will be from launch early. Like, the first ones will be going online in the fourth quarter of this year. They couldn't say whether they will all have it from the first the day they open up, or if they'll be retrofitting. But at some point between the end of this year and, you know, the next 18 months, they will have NACS connectors on their chargers as well. They will be adopting NACS across the board over the next couple of years. And again, I think the rest of the industry is going to be following over the next several months.
It's just a matter of time. It's a matter of everyone figuring out how quickly they can do it.
Yeah, Hyundai's apparently talking to them. I think the longest holdout might be Volkswagen, even though, you know, Electrify America said they would have those charging, they would support NACS, which doesn't mean Electrify America is going to be better. That's the thing. Like, NACS doesn't automatically fix everything.
Replacing the connector does not fix all their other issues.
Yeah,
no, it does not.
It just means you can go to the you know, and now you're opening up, you know. Tesla is now opening itself up to having the same sort of issues where they have to support all these vehicles. So,
yeah,
we'll see how it works. I mean, when I tested it again, this is sort of anecdotal evidence because it was just me doing it once with the BMW with the iX, where I had to drive like 2.5 hours to try out with the Super Dock. It worked fine, but we'll see what happens once they have to support every single car on on the supercharger network.
Yeah, we already know that they have issues with vehicles with 800 or 900 volt electrical systems, that they don't charge at full speed. Because the current superchargers, you know, are 400 volt systems. And so they only charge, like, I think Hyundai, Kia, Genesis vehicles will only charge at like 40 kilowatts, which is not great. And I think, you know, Lucids are not much different. Mm-hmm. So there's some things that they have to address there. But the new fourth generation superchargers, which they're supposed to start rolling out this year, I think they've already installed some in Europe. Those will run at higher voltages. And so those should work fine. But one of the things, you know, I've seen a fair bit of over the last couple of weeks is, you know, some consternation that, you know, about, you know, giving Tesla and Musk too much control over the charging infrastructure. I know, you know, Tim Stevens has written some stuff, and there was something in Jalopnik the other day. I understand that. You know, I mean, I'm not a fan of Elon, but, you know, I think the industry is doing the right thing. And I think, you know, ultimately, you know, Tesla will not have a monopoly on EV charging. You know,
it's support. I mean, you can just charge your car at Tesla, which, by the way, more expensive than the regular charge than like EA and everywhere else. So they're going to end up being like the premium. It's still electricity. It's not like you're going to get gas, where some gas is kind of trashy. And so it's electricity.
Yeah. Electrons are electrons.
Yeah, it was like 10 cents more per kilowatt when I charged at the Tesla charger versus the Electrify America. And again, when I did that drive, both of them worked fine with the iX. So it's not, I mean, it's going to be great if you're going across country because, you know, there's this really nice, dense Tesla network. But at the same time, when you're around town, if for whatever reason you need to charge, you're probably going to pay more for a Tesla charger than you are for an EA or a charge point or something else. So it's just it helps. It makes the infrastructure, it's a denser infrastructure thanks because of that. But it doesn't, they're not good at the goodness of their heart. And again, it's really a port.
Yeah. So the rest, EA and EVgo and ChargePoint, they all need to step up their game. And I wrote an article, about this, defending, why I think that this is a good move and, that it's smart for the other automakers, even though, they're going to a competitor, they're doing the right thing, and also outlining some of these risks that you mentioned. The costs, the support challenges that Tesla is going to face. But I still think that this is the right move.
Because at the end of the day, it's not whether or not I like Elon Musk or don't like. And again, I'm going to tell you just flat out, talking to current and former Tesla engineers, all the good ideas that come out of Tesla don't come from Elon. Like the charging network wasn't his idea. The like having the route charging, that wasn't his idea. That was just one of the engineers. The good ideas are not his.
He just takes credit for all the good ideas.
Yeah,
he
just
isn't the thing though? If you have a company, you can't come up with every idea. Like you're gonna you surround.
Yeah, but he comes up with all the bad ideas. That's the problem.
I'm sure he's had a good one or two in there, but I mean, you surround yourself with people who have.
He's very good.
Ideas.
That was the thing is he's very good at getting people very excited about what the thing is.
Yeah,
and that's not bad. If they come up with great ideas because of that, then it's a win-win.
But I think the sort of the lionization of him is sort of like the same thing as the lionization of Steve Jobs, where like, oh, Steve Jobs didn't come up with all the ideas. He just got people to do the ideas.
So maybe it's better to say, even if it wasn't their individual idea, their enthusiasm and push for the people they work with encourage people to come up with ideas that they were able to bring to fruition.
Yeah. And, that's the key to management is getting the right people, in the right positions and then empowering them to do their jobs. And, don't micromanage.
Yes. Hire good people and let them do their job.
That's what Steve Jobs was really good at.
He was really good.
He didn't care about operations, but he hired Tim Cook and other operations people and let them do what they do best. And look what
I wrote that article. Elon Musk needs a Tim Cook.
Yep.
He needs someone because he needs to stop micromanaging that shit because he keeps fucking it up. Every time he goes in there, you're like, the Tesla's running like a well-oiled machine while he's over there fighting with Twitter.
Yeah.
Because the right people are doing the right job. Just let them do it.
Yeah. All right. Let's answer a few listener questions. So first up from Michael Burns, this actually was posted on Mastodon. I sent this over to Nicole earlier this morning. Because
I actually have to say, I was like sitting there drinking my morning coffee and it was early. I got home late last night. I'm like, what is he asking me?
So I had posted, a link to my story on the Wrangler First Drive last week and posted the picture showing the instrument cluster, being in the Wrangler at a 30 degree tilt to the left and showing the instrument cluster with the gauges in there, show your pitch and roll angle on the vehicle. And so Michael asked, is that a new feature in the 24 Jeep Wrangler? The inclusion of the off-road app readings in the instrument cluster. And I didn't think it was. I thought it was there before, but Nicole?
Yes, I confirmed. I was going to run out to the car and my husband said, no, it is there. I can tell you that. So you already have it in
your
instrument cluster.
Doing?
He knew it. So he was
you
able to confirm.
You guys have what, a 22 Wrangler?
He has a What model year did it come out? Was it 22, the first model year?
I think so, with the 4x8.
That sounds right.
Okay, yeah. I have the first model, so I want to say 22. So it is there. The part that's new is that, and I'm going to forget the trail. Oh, what's the trail something? The app. I just forgot the name of the app.
The trail guide.
The trail guide. All of that stuff is not, that's new for 24. Right. But this stuff was already there, and yes, you could already see it in the instrument cluster.
And there's a bunch of other vehicles that have something. I mean, you can get that in F-150s and Super Duties and I think Ram trucks and things like that. There's a lot of vehicles that are off-roadable that have that kind of capability in there.
Yes.
All right. Next up, by email from Jagalure. I have a question. I read your article. This is something I wrote in Forbes, but one thing's not clear. You wrote the Toyota dealers will have the 2024 Prius Prime in May. Do you mean May 2024? Do dealers allow you to buy a car before it comes out? So the model year 2024 Prius Prime is available now. It is, well, it's available. You can order it. You may be able to find one in a dealer. I don't know how much inventory dealers have, probably not much, but, I looked at the June sales numbers came out earlier this week. And, according to Toyota, they've sold 2,666 Primes so far this year. And I think about 500 of them, or so in May, or sorry, in June. So, they're arriving. You may have to look around, but they are available to buy now if you can find one or order one.
Yeah. It's weird how early things are out. Like, you know, we drive 24s and it's like, it's January 23. It's very screwy. And I honestly think it confuses everybody.
You can drive this car. Like, but I've seen this car on the road, but you can't talk about it for like 3 weeks. Like,
that's the weirder one, right?
Yeah, like down the street.
Yes, they've made deliveries.
I can go to a dealer and buy one.
Right, yeah. I could just go to a dealer and test drive this and talk about it, but I can't talk about it because I drove it on your program. Okay.
Like the Super Duties, you know, the new Super Duties. They were in dealers for a couple of weeks before we got a chance to drive them. So,
mm-hmm. It's weird.
All right, Lawrence in the Desert asked, and I'm presuming this is not TE asking this question, because he's been dead for a while. Love the show. I'm a car junkie and enjoy your content and format. I recently saw a Faraday Future vehicle in Bakersfield and was intrigued. I wasn't sure what it was at the time. The hood emblem looks like the Polestar. I just saw another one and got a picture of it and used Google Lens to identify it. Needless to say, I was shocked to see the price. $300,000.
That's a bargain.
What market is this for? interested to hear your thoughts and if there is a real market for it.
It's for people with very, very deep pockets who just want to throw money out there on a toy.
Well, and you know, the reality is that I don't think that it really matters if there's a market for it, because I don't think that Faraday is ever actually going to get these in any kind of serious when
they
production.
Positive, Sam. My greatest
positive that they will never produce these.
my greatest moment as an automotive journalist is when Faraday invited us to their headquarters when it was in either Hawthorne or Torrance in Southern Hawthorne. California. And we walked around and they were showing us everything they were doing for this car. And they kept saying, yeah, we're building this ourselves. We're building this ourselves. We're like, instead of using suppliers. Mm-hmm. And by the end, I'm like, this car is going to be $300,000 by the time they're done. And ding, ding, lo and ding, behold, ding. Like 5 years later, $300,000. So it's $300,000, not because it's worth $300,000. It's $300,000 because they decided they're going to make everything themselves.
And this company has burned through so much money over the last 8 years, you know, at least, you know, $3, $4, maybe $5 billion. And I was at the press conference they did at CES in 2017.
Oh, yeah.
Where they unveiled the FF91. This was a 2 hour long show.
Oh my God.
It was so long. And then the car, you only saw the car for like a few moments because it drove off into the outside world.
And this is the same car that you saw now, the FF91. And at that time, I think they were targeting a price point of somewhere around $150,000, $160,000. Oh yeah. And it was going to be, and this was in January of 2017. It was going to be in production by the end of 2018. It's now July of 2023.
Yeah.
It's still not in production. They have been on the verge of bankruptcy multiple times in that interim period. And somehow they still managed to keep finding suckers to put more money into
someone
this.
They just keep giving them money. I don't understand.
Is there like some sugar daddy who just really, really wants it to work? I feel like it's
like a tax write-off. It's some sort of weird boondoggle where someone makes money by losing money.
I love
money.
That word.
In Southern California, celebrities will open up these restaurants. Like, oh, here's it. It's a tax write-off. Those restaurants are built to fail. They're only going to be around for 6 months to a year, and they all fail. Every one of them. But they're like, oh, I made a loss on this thing. So it's a tax thing.
Yeah. That's probably it, because, you know, this thing will almost certainly never make it to production. Or at least
– they'll make one. That drives around Bakersfield for some odd reason.
How many Lordstowns did they make?
31.
Was it 31? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow. 31 Lordstown endurance trucks. I don't expect anybody will ever spend $300,000 on one of these, because it's just never going to happen. Lawrence goes on. He says, also, there's a VinFast dealer in Bakersfield. They do seem to have vehicles, but reviews will hopefully keep them off the roads.
There's like three or four of them now in my area. I see them. Yeah? They're different colors. That's how I know they're not the same car.
Yeah, I was seeing them around here for a while.
They gave us one car to review, but the better cars were on the boat that showed up that day. And I'm just like, why did you give us these cars that no one can buy anymore to review, and the better cars have just arrived? What is happening? Why did you give us these cars when the better cars are here? Just wait a month and have us drive the better cars.
Lawrence says, I commute over to Hatchapi daily and wondered what EV or hybrid you would recommend. I currently have a 2020 Civic Si and love the manual. I'm getting 40 miles per gallon average, and I'm not sure going EV or hybrid would save that much. Keep up the good work, and I'll be listening on my commute, Lawrence in the desert. So, frankly, first of all, I'm shocked that Lawrence is getting 40 miles per gallon in a 2020 Civic. That seems on the high side, unless he's driving downhill both ways. But I mean,
that road from Bakersfield up to Tatchby. I grew up in Tatchby, by the way. From Bakersfield to Tatchby, it's, you know, you're battling.
How do you say the name of this town?
Tatchby.
Tehachapi?
Okay. It's very windy. So if you're getting 40, if you've probably come from like Mojave or Roseman, the road from the desert to Tehachapi isn't that bad. But the grade from Bakersfield to Tehachapi can be pretty. But, you know, people were flying up that road.
Yeah.
I don't know where, if it's Lancaster or Mojave or Roseman.
So would you switch to EV? I'm getting 40. I'm not sure.
Can he charge at home if he lives in a house? If he has a house, he can charge at home. Then, you know, something with at least 250 would be probably fine. It's 40 miles bigger field, another 20 to 60. It's 120 miles. So he should be able to, it shouldn't be that big of a deal. If he's down like in Lancaster, that's then add like another 20, 40 miles to his thing. So maybe a PHEV might be better. I mean, this is the sort of that edge case where someone who's driving not just a long distance, but also up a very steep hill. It's 4,000 foot elevation of Tehachapi. I've got a lot of information about Tehachapi, apparently. I thought you grew up somewhere. So yeah, no, I've driven EVs up Tehachapi and haven't had any issues going up that hill. I mean, it's an EV, it's got torque. Whee!
And going back, you're going downhill. So you're going to,
yeah, you're going down here. You're just regening like a crazy person. So anything he uses going from either Mojave or Mojave or Rosemond or wherever he's out in the desert, he's gonna gain all of that back, essentially from Keene all the way down to to Weed Patch. So he's gonna be sitting pretty. Yeah, I think it should be fine. If you're driving a Civic Si, I don't know. I think you should just keep driving your Civic Si. It's only 2020. It's 2023.
The Civic Si is doing okay, unless it's. For some
I mean,
reason,
you're going to save on gas. Way. I mean, you're still probably going to save on gas, just because going up that hill still will get you. But yeah, just keep driving your Civic Si. He's got a manual. You know, I think you're fine for now. It's a fun car. It's got a manual, and it's also, you know, you're getting really good gas mileage. So I think you're golden for now.
Or, you know, I mean, a hybrid, you know, wouldn't be a terrible choice as well. Especially, you know, you might want to take a look at the new Prius. You know, I mean, it's pretty stylish. It's got actually similar amount of power to what's in the Civic. You're about 200 horsepower in the new Prius. And it's, you know, that's the price point, you know, especially if you go with the hybrid as opposed to the Prime, you know, that's going to be, you know, in, well, averaging, you know, probably close to 50 or more, you know, between going uphill and going downhill. You know, you're going to get a lot of regen on the downhill side, and the price point is going to be pretty similar to the Civic. So that is something you might want to take a look at.
But you won't get the manual. I'm saying
that's true. No manual. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you get a PHEV, or once you get the PHEV or the hybrid, that's it. That's to say goodbye to the manual.
Yeah. Anything electrified, you're going to lose
the manual. You're going to have to lose the manual. Yeah.
So my advice as a big cheerleader for EVs is just stick with your Civic for as long as possible, especially up that hill. It's much easier to get up that hill with the manual transmission than the automatic, because you're going vroom, 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 you know. Yeah. And when those trucks pull out in front of you on 58, you know, Lawrence, you know.
He knows. He does.
All right. Finally, Sean Whitehurst says, greetings, Wheel Bearings team. I picked up rental cars in France, Italy, and Norway last month. There was a ton of EVs. I had a PHEV DS7 and a PHEV Toyota RAV4. I tried to charge the RAV4 at my hotel, but was unsuccessful. First, I had to use a browser and not an app for the outlet because apps are geo-locked, and similar issues with parking and scooter apps. Once that was figured out, I pulled out the cable from the trunk. It had CSS on one end and the EU plug on the other end, just like my 120 volt Leaf. The charging outlet at the hotel was CCS. I looked for the rest of the trip at all the charging stands and kept finding CCS. Is this normal? Are there CCS to CCS cables? It just felt so odd for bring your own cable to not work with OEM cables. So I'm not quite sure. I mean, yeah, CCS type 2, you know, which is a different variant of the CCS we have here in North America, is standard across Europe. So all the chargers you'll find across Europe all have CCS connectors on them. Presumably the plug-in, you know, the RAV4 Prime in Europe, you know, also has the CCS type 2 port on there. The cable that would come with the vehicle would be designed for plugging into your household outlet. So it's going to have the CCS on one side to plug into the car, and then the EU plug on the other end. I've never seen a CCS to CCS cable.
So they have the BYOD, like, bring your own charging cable, like, everywhere. Like, when you park out, like, on the street, there's, like, a little box, and you just plug it in. I've actually never tried to unplug someone's cable to see what the port is, so I don't know if it's regular plug or if it's something else. Because they might have it might be a different plug, but I don't think those are fast chargers, so I don't see why they wouldn't just be the regular Euro plug.
Yeah, I would guess anything like that, like a curbside charger that doesn't have a cable on it, would just have a standard European, you know, AC outlet. Because, you know, and that would be fine, because in Europe they use 240 volts anyway, so it's going to be the same thing as a level 2.
Yeah.
So, you know, that should be what you know, so anything that's got a cable on it is going to have a CCS connector on the end of it, a CCS type 2 connector on the end of it that you plug right into the vehicle. If it doesn't have a cable, if it's just got a plug, it's probably going to have just a standard EU plug.
I'm in Europe, I'm going to walk up, because I always like take pictures of them, because I'm always like, why is this so hard in the United States? Because it's everywhere in Europe.
Why is it so hard?
Especially
for us?
In Norway. If you look in Norway, they're just, oh my like God, they're every everywhere. Parking space is,
everywhere.
One of those. And it's just bring your own cable, which makes sense, because, you know, when you have the cable out, people mess with it or whatever.
Well, especially if it's curbside, you know, people are going to, it's going to be
it's in the street. Yeah, it's going to be on the ground. It's going to be in the street. But if it's bring your own cable, and you're just like, everyone gets out of their car and they plug their little thing and they plug their.
Right.
When we were in, where were we? Amsterdam, when we had a car, like, we were like, oh, we can park. No, we can't. It's charging. It's parking spot. We park somewhere else. So yeah, I'll go look at those. I guess I need to start opening them up and
paying attention,
tearing into them, and
see all what right.
Dealio is.
So that's it for this week. Thank you, everybody, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.